is, and welcome back to the Where's Jeff podcast. Tomo, Charlie, I have a little surprise for you today. We have been joined in this week's podcast with an old friend of ours. Please welcome Mr. Tony Cotty. Hey, Tone.
All right, Tess, I thought he was going to say a small friend there. Let's get all the jokes out of the way, the small friend and little friend and all that. Let's get it all out of the way.
I would never be that facetious.
Oh, come on. Let's think back, Tomo, when this happened before. I remember we were on Soccer Saturday all together and somebody said he's not happy and you said, which one is he?
Which one is he?
Keep going, Chaz, keep going.
I said, should we get the little fella on? I did mean Jeff, but Tiz and Charlie went, oh, you mean TC? Honestly, it was...
Tomo, you know I'm the same height as Jeff. There was a photographic evidence. You know I'm the same height as Jeff.
TC, any nil-nils this season?
Well, I've actually not been working, Tomo, funny enough. I've sort of joined the club the same as you guys, you know. So, I've not even had a chance to get a nil-nil because I've not been into any games, apart from following my beloved West Ham as well. That's been the only plus side of me not working for Sky. Obviously, I've been going to the West Ham games.
I think that's a good place to start, TC. As you rightly say, pleasurable for you so far this season. You must be absolutely delighted, scoring goals all over the place and looking a real threat in the final third. What's going on?
Well, they're carrying on from last season, Matt, really. And, you know, they had a great season. I mean, for West Ham to finish sixth was fantastic. And then start of this season, they went down, didn't they, twice at Newcastle, came back to win 4-2. And then I was at the Leicester game. They absolutely battered Leicester. They really, really played well. And the same at the Palace game at the weekend. Good first half, but not so good second half. But if you'd have said 7 from 9 at the start, West Ham fans would have taken that all day long. But they've got good players. And if you've got someone like Antonio on form, then you've got half a chance, I think, because he's been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Leicester game, TC, we saw the AOZ Perez red card incident. Did you think that was an instant red when you were there? Obviously, you were at the game. Did you think instant red?
No, I don't think there was one person in the stadium who thought it, Matt. I mean, you've got to be honest, you need your binoculars at the London Stadium anyway, so you can't see the incident. I didn't think at the time it was one of them. You're thinking, oh, maybe it was a foul, and then they put it up on the big screen and the whole ground went, oh, like that. Ooh, you know,
so I
think once that happened, it was always getting a red, yeah.
TC, just enlighten us. I thought they weren't allowed to show incidents like that. Has that changed?
What they're doing, Tomo, I don't know whether it's every club, but certainly at West Ham, if there's an incident involving the home team, they show it. If there was an incident involving the away team, they don't show it. And I don't know why, but they just made the decision to put that up on the big screen. And the same with goals. If a goal goes in, you get 25 replays of the West Ham goal. If it's the Leicester goal, you obviously didn't see a replay of it. So it's just what they chose to do, I think.
You've seen quite a few.
Let me ask you this. With the crowd being back, and they kind of always gave Big Moisey quite a hard time because, you know, the Sam Allardyce scenario, and then he was there and then he was away. Has that kind of, has he won them back over, do you think, or are they still slightly on edge? Because, you know, it was a stunning season last season and they started well this campaign. Are they still on edge?
Oh, I think they've settled down, Charles. I think, obviously Moisey done a really good job the first time, kept him in the Premier League. And then for whatever reason, I said it at the time, I didn't understand it, but they went down the Pellegrini route, a completely bizarre decision, spent lots of money. And then, of course, they bring Moisey back. And I think it was more that the West Ham fans would have moaned whoever would have taken over after Pellegrini because there was so much sort of distrust of the owners and so many people moaning. It wasn't about Moisey. It was just the fact that, you know, oh, here we go again, we're changing managers. But I think with all what went on last season, you know, for them to finish sixth, and I know it's hard to really judge what sort of season it was because there weren't any crowds, but you can only perform if you, you know, with what you're given, can't you? And to, as I said, to finish sixth was an incredible season. The fans love Moisey now. The problem's not with Moisey, Chaz. The problem I think the fans have is with the owners, but that's been the case for a long, long time now.
Do you think they'll eventually sell to him?
I think so, Charlie, yeah. But like, listen, like with any business, the price has got to be right, isn't it? And you can't blame David Sullivan if there's lots of people wanting to buy the football club, he's going to get the best price for it. So I think he will sell eventually. But, you know, I think over the next couple of weeks, I think there could be a few developments.
TC, I know you've been quite vociferous and you've been helping out some, possibly the new investors and everything. surely, you know, and some people are sitting there and they'll be saying, why are you getting involved in all this? Surely for the good of West Ham, you've got to look beyond this good spell that they're through. You have to look to the future. And I agree with you. And I know Sullivan and Golds, they probably will sell for the right price. But you and the people who are looking to come in surely are looking to the future of West Ham and not just this present. I know it's going great on the field, but surely that's not the be-all and end-all. Surely it's about next season, the season after that. You know, when you've got, you need investment, you need players, you need a turnover. Surely that should be the way ahead.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Tom, the fans, they're absolutely delighted and thrilled with what's going on the field. You know, for West Ham to be in second position in the Premier League, they was top, obviously, until Spurs won the game. You know, for that, for them to be in that position is an achievement in itself. But you've got to look at the bigger picture. And, you know, I think David Sullivan, David Gold, you know, up to a point, they've done a good job and they've taken the club to where they've taken the club. But, you know, the people that I'm talking to, that I'm talking about Pi Capital, obviously, they are... approached me and they you know, I went to speak to them and I went to see them and I'm apprehensive, but I went there as a fan, and as a fan I asked all the questions. I'm asking about the stadium, I'm asking about the training ground, and probably most importantly from a fan's point of view, and we all know this as ex-players, how much money are you going to spend on new players? And that was, you know, that's what fans are asking, that's what they're interested in. So I asked all those questions, and if I didn't like the answers, I would never have backed them publicly. I would have just walked out and gone, thanks very much. That's not in the best interest of the football club. And where I'm coming from, I want what's best for... We've all got our own clubs and you want what's best for your football club. And I honestly believe that these guys can take the club forward. You know, it's never going to be easy to get into the Champions League. We know that for a club like West Ham. But you've got to aim to do that. And if they've gone as far as they can under the current owners, and step aside and let another group take over, whether that's Pi or someone else, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, we're going to give it our best shot and we'll see what develops.
Oh, good luck with that, mate. Hope all goes well.
Thanks, Tis.
You normally, when you're at the stadium, you're concentrating on the home team. But I thought there was a player in the opposition team who looked pretty impressive at the weekend. And I just wondered what you thought of Conor Gallagher's all-round performance on Saturday.
I thought he was fantastic, Tis. He's not a player I know a lot about, I've got to be honest. And that he sort of, I know he was at West Brom last season when he got a few rave reviews, and obviously coming through the Chelsea Academy. But I look at him in the early parts of the game and it sort of passed him by a little bit. But that wasn't just him. That was the whole Palace team. They was really poor in that first half. But he was one of the guys who was working hard in midfield. And with the blonde hair, you sort of notice him anyway. But I've got to say that the two goals, particularly the second goal, I mean, the second goal was a goal that any of us would have been proud of. You know, it was... You know, the touch and the Cruyff turn and the finish as well. And, you know, that was following on from a decent first goal as well. But he was certainly the star of the show for Palace. And they was the better team in the second half. West Ham played well first half, but a draw was a fair result. But Conor Gallagher, I mean, if he carries on like that, you know, he will start to get rave reviews across the board.
In fairness, Vieira needs something like that, doesn't he? Something to cling to, because it's been a dreadful start for Palace. But you see what happened. And like, not that I watched all the game, seen the highlights like a lot of people did. And you're quite right. The first half, from the sounds of it, they never got out of their own half. They were poor. They don't seem to have anything going. This could be the spark, couldn't it? That Vieira maybe wants, because it is a big result now. And I know it's only three games in, but going to Palace, and it was a good result for them.
Yeah, and they not only needed the result, they needed to get that goal as well, Tomo. I mean, there was some, you know, as usual, they're huge following from the Crystal Palace fans. They're great fans, aren't they? And you could see that sense of relief when the goal went in from Connor. And then, of course, they got that second goal. So it's a really, really good point for them. But they've got to build on it, haven't they, and take it forward. I think it's going to be a tough season for Palace. So many senior players have left the club. And when you bring lots of new players and a new manager with different ideas, I think it's going to be a tough season.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we've got a couple of days left in the window. Eddie Nketiah is linked with him from Arsenal, who could get him goals. They've been linked again with Edouard at Celtic, who is a good player, but they'll need to get him up to speed for the Premier League. So if they could nick a striker, TC, they might be okay, but Vieira needs a big lift. You're absolutely bang on.
Yeah, he does. And I don't think your club, Charlie, I don't think your club can afford to let too many players go with where they are, their position, Arsenal. They need to keep hold of people like Eddie Nketiah, because at least he can score a goal.
No, we don't score goals, TC, so it doesn't affect us. Wait, who invited him on to mention Arsenal? I thought we weren't going to mention Arsenal tonight.
Kaz, I couldn't resist it. Sorry, mate. I do apologise. I couldn't resist it. Where can West Ham finish? I think the problem, Tomo, is going to be that once they hit the European campaign, I mean, and they've got to keep key players fit. I mean, if they can keep Antonio, we've already mentioned, Declan Rice is another one. They've got to keep those key players fit. Obviously, made a couple of signings now, which is good. They needed to bring probably four or five players into the squad just to get the bodies in. But it's a whole new experience for the club. You know, they played in Europe before, of course they have, but they've never really had that group stage, a guaranteed six games. They've got Manchester United away in the League Cup as well. So the one thing I would say, they're in safe hands because they've got David Moyes. David, you know, he's got experience at Everton, experience at Manchester United. He knows what a European campaign's all about. Where can they finish? I think if they finish in the top 10, I think that's going to be a good season. And what the fans want, they want a good cup run. West Ham fans, they've not had much to shout over the years, as we all know, but a good cup run is always great for the fans. So I want to see them give it a real go in the Europa League. And if you can stay in the competition to the new year, you know, you've got a chance because, you know, there's some teams in there that West Ham will fancy themselves against.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned it there, TC, so I think it's probably best if we move on to the Arsenal. I mean, there was no surprise that they didn't get anything out of the game against Manchester City, Chaz.
Charlie's rant. Charlie's rant. Charlie's rant.
What was Granit Xhaka doing?
I tell you what he's doing, Tiz. He's done what he's always done. He played the Joker card. And he is the joker of our club, because how he can manipulate Roma to get 17 million, I would have dropped him personally. I would have got a personal private jet and dropped him myself. And then he signs a new contract. And I had a lovely chat last week with the guys from the Arsenal Lounge, and they were surprised that I'm being supportive to Arteta. And I can understand, because I've got a thin case. But when you look at the so-called captain in Xhaka, that's a cop-out. That challenge is one that he goes, oh, look, I'm trying my best, fans, but if I get a red card and I get sent off, I'm not really truly upset, but I might look it. It was an absolute camouflage, and it sums everything up that is going on at this football club at the moment. I'm trying to stand up for Arteta, but the youngsters are no longer the issue. They'll be fine. The issue is going to be, what team is he picking? Because Kolasinac, where did he come from? He was a ghost last season. He was out the door. He's back in. I just could not believe his choices. And as much as I'm trying to support Mikel Arteta, I'm finding it incredibly difficult to give a proper and understandable reason why. So, absolutely torture. And then that bloody Glasgow derby drove me even worse. It was a terrible weekend. I tell you what, no wonder I take a drink.
What a bad weekend, Chaz. Can somebody just make sure Charlie's got no shoelaces there, please?
Take his belt off. And Charlie, it is. But listen, serious note, if Arsenal don't beat Norwich, do you think Arteta can stay?
I don't think the crowd, Tomo, at the moment I want them to stay. And I'm talking about a majority. As I say, I spoke to three lovely lads who were focusing on the Arsenal Lounge, and they were surprised I was standing up for him. And the reason I'm standing up is because I think he's got the right philosophy in terms of where he's trying to go playing football. But if you don't have the personnel, I mean, what they kept saying, why didn't you sign Saliba and then put him out on loan when you've got pretty awful defenders in the first place? It's mesmerising what he's doing and what he's picking. So I think the fans already want him out, but I think the ownership, and you've been through this, Tomo, yourself with American owners, they'll sit tight and they'll hope that he can get through the Norwich game, and then I think it's Burnley away. They've got a good home cup draw against Wimbledon. So they'll think and hope that the flak eases down. But I don't think it's going to disperse now, my friend. I really do think that the Arsenal fans are all out. And if they're going to pick an Arteta, then they're going to go all out for the ownership. So I think they'll give him probably till Christmas. But if he does get beat by Norwich, I don't really know where he actually goes. I don't, because I think the fans have made their mind up.
The way I'm seeing it, Charlie, he's maybe there at the moment, or he's quite soon. He seems to have lost the dressing room. there doesn't seem to be that spark there anymore. And listen, I know you can go down to 10 men and you can show a bit of fight, but they didn't even seem that in them. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, are these players actually wanting to fight for them? And I think a few of them have down tools in a bit of a way.
You touched on that, mate, last week, didn't you? And then Aubameyang scores a hat-trick at West Brom and Lacazette comes off the bench. Then he doesn't play Lacazette and he plays a false five at the back, which is it's not Arsenal. He was waiting to get damaged. That's what he was. And these two guys said to me last week, TC, they said to me, would you take a 2-0 right now? And I said, absolutely, I would. And it proved the case. But he's got to start picking a team that has some sort of a, you know, style or ambition to go and at least hurt people. That's at least what Arsenal tried to do in the past. The only thing I would say, the Arsenal fans out there, and I know there's quite a lot of them now starting to tune into all this stuff because they kind of miss us chatting about our teams in a more forceful way in other areas. But, you know, I suggested before Arteta got it that Brendan Rodgers would be the choice. I honestly don't know whether they can get Brendan Rodgers now from Leicester. That would be the issue that I now have if Arteta moves on.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. TC, I just want to get, before we let you go, I want to get your opinion on a controversial incident from the weekend. Norwich's disallowed goal against Leicester with the offside. I don't know if you saw it.
I've seen it, Matt, yeah.
The offside just in front of Schmeichel. I mean, do you think that he was clearly interfering with play, or do you think Norwich had a case there that Schmeichel wasn't going to get there anyway?
I think Schmeichel was really clever, Matt, because as soon as that goal went in, he sort of sprinted after the referee, almost sort of forcing them to look at the VAR. I don't know. Half a foot offside or wherever it was. I mean, I think if I'm being really critical, I think Cantwell probably was just a little bit lazy. He just needed, only had to take a step just to get back onside, and then the goal would have stood. You know, I mean, Leicester have got away with it, haven't they, really? I mean, it could so easily have been given, that's for sure. And you know, they would have got the, you know, only one point out instead of the 3 points. So, but it's an Achilles heel for Leicester, Matt. They're defending from free kicks and corners. They do zonal marking. It drives me mad, and I've been saying it for a long time. You know, when you haven't got Johnny Evans playing, when you haven't got Fofana playing and players like that, you know, they're certainly susceptible to it. But they got away with it. I mean, I used to play in that position, just stand with a corner, just standing on the goalkeeper and just try and block the goalkeeper off. But he didn't do a lot, did he, Cantwell? And they didn't put a man on the far post. I always think you should probably put a man on the far post. So I think they was definitely fortunate to get away with that, Leicester.
No, absolutely, mate. Well, TC, it's been great to hear from you, mate. And we'll look forward to catching up with you later on this season, hopefully.
I think we're going to go out for a meal or a drink later on in the season. So I look forward to seeing you all, boys. I do miss you. I've got to be honest, I do miss you. I miss the show. But listen, time moves on and there's something else around the corner for us all.
Chins up, TC.
Absolutely, mate.
Chins up.
TC, you know, it's lovely seeing you, pal.
Speak to you soon, mate.
You get everything you wish for when you grow up.
And that's the sort of stick I really miss on a Saturday. Thanks, boys. Take care. See you soon.
Cheers,
boys.
Mate.
Cheers, TC.
Good stuff, boys. Good stuff. So, Tomo, I want to come to you next because there was a penalty incident at Brighton involving your Merseyside rivals. Now, last week, you very much came down on the side of Everton. Do you think that was a definite penalty again on Seamus Coleman? Are we going to see you back in Everton again?
I wouldn't say it was a definite penalty, but if you're forcing me to say, yes, it is. And Coleman does very well because Coleman leans into him. I still think I'd go berserk if it was wasn't given against my team. I think it was I do think it was a penalty. I'm not going to say it's a stonewaller, but it was a penalty kick, my dear Everton friends.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, Charlie,
he's turning into a blue, Tess. He's becoming a blue.
What? I know, Charlie, I want to come to you on this one because I don't know if this ever happened to you before, but talk to me about Richarlison wanting to take the penalty over Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Tess, it never happened to me. I know you were a master of the penalties. I always had the feeling that I always wanted to take a penalty. But if someone was on the duty before me, either when I was a kid coming out of the Celtic first team or when I came to Arsenal, if someone already had that duty, I totally respected it. And sometimes if we were winning 3-0, I would hope they'd miss it so that my chance might come. But in the serious note, that's what you always do. If you're still, in modern day terms, not have a penalty taker nominated as number one for the kickoff, then I'd be absolutely confused by the people that don't do these type of things. But his behaviour was worse than childish. And I think the way that he kept stropping on about it, but my oh my, did Calvert-Lewin not just take the pressure right off with an absolute sweet finish. And he should have just walked up to Lucarlos and went like that with a custard pie right in his chin.
It must drive you absolutely mad as a manager. I know, Tommy, you're the only one who's had a little bit of experience of being a manager, but if you've picked a penalty taker before the game and that situation happens as a manager, that must drive you mental, because it just puts more pressure on the guy who's actually meant to be taking the penalty, surely.
There's all kinds of things. It's authorities getting ruined, Tiz. Now apparently, because up here in the Liverpool Echo and everything, we're getting people who are at the match, the reporter, you're getting it. And Calvert-Lewin is the first penalty taker. But then they were saying, if there's a second penalty, well, Richarlison takes it. And I'm going, well, why wouldn't it? Even if it's you're 1-0 up, you scored a penalty, surely you'd have your penalty taker taking the second one. Whether Rafa was just trying to ease the pressure coming on Richarlison, but the Liverpool Echo, they must have done Richarlison watch, because they were saying about his antics after the game. He did go over and give his shirt to one of the, but he walked off in a right strop, like he walked down a tunnel. I don't know what's going on with the guy. He should be thankful playing in the Premiership for a very, very small club, and everything seems to go... Don't start!
What would have happened if someone would have came to you and debated that?
That's a very good question, Jazz. I would have been, I would have been very forceful in actually getting the ball back off of him. And I don't think, I mean, obviously I had a pretty good record and people kind of respected my authority on the penalties. So it was never come into question, really. And we were never that far ahead in a game and got a penalty that someone else thought they might take it. I was never in that situation. But I can imagine if I was, I would have been quite forceful in going, hang on a minute, I'm the penalty taker here. I don't miss, well, just the once. And it's my ball, so give it to me. That would have been my reaction, I think.
Yeah.
It is quite remarkable, though, that grown men at this in this day and age are having arguments over who the penalty taker is. It really shouldn't come.
Well, we've seen it more and more, aren't we?
It's just childish for me.
I do. I think it is. I think it's very selfish. You should be thinking team first. That's the whole top and bottom of it. You don't think of yourself at moments like that. Who knows what can happen? It's only 1-0. And anything can happen. This can turn around, and Tiz is bang on. The pressure then that it's putting on Calvert-Lewin, he knows that he's got a score here. Coleman's called it. I admire Townsend, who's not been there long. But Townsend was trying to do it in a nice way and saying, it's not your responsibility. It's Calvert-Lewin's responsibility. Now, hand the ball over. Who was it who knocked the ball out of his arm, by the way? There was one of the Everton players actually knocked the ball off Richarlison. So, but I do. I think you should always think team first.
No, you're exactly, absolutely spot on, Tomo. Team first for me is everything. Now, well, I think while we're with you, Tomo, we're going to move to your team, because Chelsea obviously took the lead at Anfield. Cracking goal, and then get a man sent off, you get back level with the penalty. What did you make of the red card for Reece James?
You know what? I know everybody's been talking about it, this double jeopardy, and I do think it's harsh. As much as it went on, he's not made a bad tackle or something. The ball's going, I do think it was a penalty. I don't think there really should be any arguments, because it's come off his thigh, but it's the movement of the arm. The ball would have gone in the net. But you just think, you know, yes, he's he's done the bad deed by giving away a penalty kick, which I think is bad enough. We don't know whether Mo Salah is going to score. And Tiz, he's getting close to you now, by the way, Tiz, because he scored 14 on the trot. And who holds the record, Matt Letizier, of 23 on the trot? So it's a bit, still a bit of a difference to go. But I do think it's harsh, and I do think he should change. I think everybody who's looked at it has gone, yeah, it should be the double jeopardy thing and let him off with the secondary of a yellow card instead of a red.
Let me ask you this, Tomo, because I was interested in watching it. Now, obviously, the rules this season have changed, where if the ball hits you on the leg and goes directly up and hits you on the arm, it's not deliberate handball. So the thing that kind of did for him, in my opinion, was the movement of the arm. It was almost after it had hit his arm, he then moves his arm again as if to try to scoop it out the goal.
Yeah.
And that for me is the bit that condemns him really in that situation. What I was really surprised about is when the referee was told to go and look at the monitor. When he gets to the monitor, all he sees on the monitor is the still of the ball hitting Rhys James on the arm. Now, I think in that situation, the referee needs to see the incident in normal time to get a perspective of the situation and not just see, I'm not saying he got the decision wrong, but not just see a still of the picture of the ball hitting his arm. Surely he has to see the whole picture in normal time and to see exactly what's going on.
I was baffled by it, Tiz. I was baffled by seeing what he's seeing. And the only thing that he's got a long time to go from where he is in the penalty box over to the monitor. Is he getting told by the VAR official, listen, our opinion, we've seen it, the ball comes up and it's come off his hand, but he's pulled the ball out with his arm. Maybe, I'm only trying to sort of play devil's advocate here, Anthony Taylor's probably thinking to himself, has it hit his arm? Did it hit his arm? If it's hit his arm and trying to keep it out, he's seen that bit of it, I'm going to give a penalty. So what they've then shown is that the ball up and the ball literally hitting his arm. And that's where they've stopped it. And he's gone, well, that's my decision. But still, Tiz, I think for the sake of everybody, we're all watching that screen on the halfway line, in that dugout. We're all wanting to see it to clarify it, and we didn't get that. So I think it was really wrong for them to just judge it on that split second moment. Agree?
I think that's what ended up where absolutely. What you're saying, Tiz, before we go, I'll be brief before we go for a break, but it was the arm movement, wasn't it? Because in the first version, when I seen it, I thought he styed it and he's okay. But when you see the spin on the ball after about replay six, it's the movement of the arm, which I don't think he's consciously trying to keep out the net. It's just the position of his arm. And I think that's why they had to identify it. But at least they clarified it, because you can take you back to Newcastle and Southampton, and they were taking 2-3 minutes at the weekend. So at least they did it quickly enough and they took the initiative.
No, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. We are going to take a little break, and we shall be back in the second half of the Where's Jeff podcast. Welcome back to the second part of the Where's Jeff podcast, and what a bit of transfer news we have had this week, boys. Charlie, what has happened with Ronaldo? Why has he joined Manchester United, and why have Manchester United gone after Ronaldo?
Well, I think the true fact of the nature was that Manchester United didn't want Ronaldo. They didn't play the card. Now, you would think with the agent and Ronaldo's background at Man United, then as soon as he becomes available, the deal is done and dusted. I remember way back when my good friend Phil there was representing Liverpool, and they were over talking to Ronaldo at Sporting Lisbon. They thought they had the deal. But the history that he's created at Manchester United must have told everybody at Manchester United that he was going to become available. Why did it take an interest from Manchester City to flag up to Manchester United that they could be embarrassed in this move. And Ronaldo would probably, without even getting involved in a conversation himself personally, had played an absolute blinder. His agent must have went, thank you very much. We can do whatever deal we want, because Manchester City have come in and threatened to take this superstar footballer who's an absolute machine. He will get his goals for a relatively cheap price. And I know he's 36, I believe. But Manchester United had nowhere to go, and Ronaldo couldn't believe how fortunate it all became. Nice and smooth, and everybody kids on, what a wonderful deal. So the fact that they didn't want him originally, or didn't actually inquire about him, tells me that this was a case of embarrassment coming towards Manchester United, that they had to take him. But then again, it's Ronaldo, so it's not as if it's a fool they're buying or a gamble they're buying. They're buying someone who's absolutely class.
Tomo, 37 years old he'll be in February. How much of an impact do you think he'll have on Manchester United season?
I think it's a great sign, and it's really exciting for the Premier League, Ronaldo coming back. I think it's good. We've seen it, absolute, all the papers, all the TV, everybody's full of this story. And it is quite a romantic story. Yes, he is 37, but this guy's a freak of nature. He will still deliver goals, because you're thinking, he gets to 36, he's playing at Juventus, as he had his day. But you look, he scored 101 goals in 134 appearances. So yeah, he's lost it. Oh my goodness, this fella is a machine. The first time round at United, he scored 118 in 292. So his stats got better as he got older. But where's he going to play, Tiz? This is now the big thing which I'm looking at, because I was just looking at the options they've got for the front. They've just signed Sancho. They've got him there. Greenwood, if you leave Greenwood out of the side, who scored in the first three games, you'd be absolutely mental. And you two tell me, is Ronaldo a centre forward? Is he? Or does he like to come from the sides? That's my big thing. So then down the middle, you've got Cavani, you've got Martial, you've got Dan James. So who, and Rashford, it's just mind-boggling. Who is going to get, dare I say it, get the nose pushed out?
Yes, indeed. I was interested in that, Tom, actually. And Ollie was asked a question after the game yesterday, or maybe even before the game yesterday, on Sunday. And he pretty much said he sees him as a centre forward and he wants to see him in the box as much as he possibly can. So that's going to be an interesting one, because obviously you're then looking at the people who are going to get pushed out. If he's going to be number one centre forward, are the likes of Greenwood and Rashford and Cavani, and are they going to be happy
Martial in
the game time? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know those guys can probably play wide as well, maybe not so much Cavani, but yeah, there's going to be some interesting man management going on to keep everybody happy in that forward line at Manchester United, I think.
To me, Ronaldo's always, he's never been a centre forward with his back to goal. I've always seen Ronaldo sort of wide, coming into the box, which he's always been most dangerous. I'm trying to think of when he's played that out and out, or is he going to be a false nine, as everybody likes to call him? I still think he'll have a massive impact in this side.
Well, he will, but I mean, his wages dictate that he probably starts, don't they? Because it's Ronaldo and because of the global significance this means to Manchester United. But I don't think the balance in midfield is correct at the moment, and it could upset them in the front line also. Ronaldo, as you say quite rightly, guys, we know he's a machine. He's still got the leap of an 18-year-old. He's just got amazing qualities. But then again, it's about service. But I was really interested in the breaking of this, like when they had Zlatan came in. And Zlatan did well for them under Mourinho, but he never really progressed the team. When Cantona came in, they changed the style a bit. It was linked. You could fire into him. He could play the number 9. He could play the number 10. He could play the number 8. And he could link all these things. And they loved him in training. Whereas Ronaldo is pure Ronaldo. It's about me, and the crosses come in for me. And if you don't service the crosses right to me, I will let you know. Let's look back at what happened to Fernandes playing in the Euros there. You know, he looked as if he was suffering trying to always find the ball to Ronaldo, and it wasn't happening for him. But he will score goals. But I'm like you, Tom. I don't see him as the number nine. If anything, he's coming off the left side. That's what he likes.
Well, Ollie intimated that he is going to be a centre-forward and he wants him in the box as often as possible. So we're going to have to watch this space on that one. Now, I'm going to come back to Manchester United's game at the weekend in a second. But Firstly, we have to talk about what happened with our Acca this week. Such a great start to the Acca last week. Unfortunately, this week, just the 1 out of 3 selections correct. However, going into stoppage time, we were only one goal away from the Acca coming up. We were one Aston Villa goal away from the Acca coming up, and there was one goal in injury time. However, Tomo, it was your team that conceded.
Tis. Did they not win? Did Newcastle not win? I turned off at 94 minutes. Did Newcastle not win?
Well, that's it, Tomo. Football is a game that lasts 97 minutes these days. You've got to stick with it to the end. Because you can never write off the Super Saints. I did warn you, and I was flabbergasted at your choice of Newcastle. And James Ward-Prowse showed what a good captain he is. Steps up and smashes the ball in the bottom corner. But for you, for me, Tomo, I thought it was a stonewall penalty, which the referee just turned away and wasn't going to give. Was this an incident where VAR got it absolutely bang on?
Absolutely. Because in normal time, I thought, he's got the ball there. He's got a nick on the ball. You know, like sort of when it happened quick and he went down, I thought, oh, has he gone, made him up? And then you see the replay of it. And it's great the way they do, that they look at this one. And I think they come to the right conclusion. And I think you could see with a lot of the Newcastle players, they knew what the outcome was going to be. And I think that's one of the, when it does get it right, I think everybody can accept it. Fans, the players, everybody can just accept it all. I thought they got that spot on because I didn't see it in normal play. I thought Lascelles had got some of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. It did look that way in real time, I must admit. So, but I was pleased that VAR
got
the decision right in the end. And I went from...
So what happened with your choice then, Tiz?
Well...
Yeah, I'm not letting you away.
My choice... Yeah, no, I that was a poor effort for me, I've got to say. I thought I probably underestimated Brentford a little bit. I thought they were very good value for their draw against Villa. And almost very cheekily nicked the 3 points when you knelt, just waited for the goalkeeper to throw the ball up, nicked it off him and then rolled it in the goal. I thought it was a clever piece of play.
Yeah, I think it always has been. I think the cuteness, I can go way back to this, and the old days was it. Tom, I remember George Best done it against England, didn't it? Little different bits and pieces that you can nick off it. But yeah, modern day, I don't know what the right terminology would be. Is it unsportsmanship or what different ways that people can look at it? Sometimes people are clever and they get punished for the wrong outcome of it. But it was cheeky. And I don't think you can disguise. You two can cover over the cracks if you like. There was only one winner of the Acca this week. Brendan Rodgers and his Leicester side. Thank you very much. I salute you.
To be fair, Chaz, you did have the first pick last week, didn't you? And you were very quick to get in Leicester at even money.
Well, Chaz, Norwich, which, Chaz, you have never been quick at anything. So, you know, if you want to get in first in 2 weeks' time, then we'll all go up about 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, because it's international weekend, lads, I've, as you know, on our chat, I've already got my team in, but we will announce that next week.
We will announce that next week. I have to say, Tom, the team you picked was very, very short odds.
What, Newcastle?
What?
we'll discuss we'll that. Talk, we'll discuss talk about that in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. But fair play, Chaz. You are the only one with a 100% record in the Acca this season, so we doff our caps to you. Yeah. And back to the Manchester United
game. It's the only thing Arsenal have got right.
I'm going to go back to the Manchester United game because last week I said that Bernd Leno for Arsenal had made probably the save of the season so far. Now, I don't know if you guys saw.
Absolutely.
But David De Gea, what a... I mean, the first save was okay. But Charlie, talk me through how he saved that second effort from Roman Saiz. What a magnificent piece of goalkeeping, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely... It was just truly... It took your breath away. It was so good. You actually wanted just to see a replay and a replay and a replay. It was so good. I've not seen this guy do that for 4 years. Remember when he first came in, it was all leg saves and reaction saves. And we all admire the goalkeepers these days, although the Wolves goalkeeper wouldn't be pleased with his conceding of the goal. But De Gea looked like he was turning into this guy who could do all those type of things. So natural. But it was absolutely that amazing that I think I just watched it and watched it and watched it over and over again to actually see, was there something that he did that was so unique? It was just reaction. And it just goes to show you that a year ago, he would never have done that. He would never have done it. He looked as if he'd gone, if I'm being fair. He looked as if he was going to go out of Manchester United. But what an amazing save. I mean, from 1 week, Leno... to that, and it was by far better than Leno's.
I'm not too sure about that, but it was quite sensational in its own right. And I think I remember a goal last year. I think it may have been when it was a sort of very close two people coming to the ball, and he literally turned his head away from the situation. To me, he made himself big. He knew he just had to do his best. That was De Gea of old. And I thought it was a stunning piece of goalkeeping. He could quite easily have gone, I've got no right. Nobody would have argued if Roman Saiz had put it in the back of the net. Nobody had said anything. But for him to guess right or it's just instinctive, it was a stunning save.
It actually reminded me a little bit of the Shevchenko in the
Jersey Dudek final, Thomas. I didn't want to mention it, Tiz. But
I was waiting for you to mention it, and then I thought I better do it because he's probably embarrassed.
Tiz, quickly, what did you make of the challenge of Pogba on Ruben Neves? Foul or no foul?
Oh my goodness, it's 100% a foul. It's 100% a foul. I mean, the fact that people seem to have missed out completely is what was Paul Pogba doing going over the top of the ball in that tackle? Because he's only made a glancing blow of the shin pad in the end, which is why Neves didn't go down straight away, because I think he's just caught his shin pad, didn't actually catch the leg full force. But if he's 2 or 3 inches to the right with that challenge, Ruben Neves could be in a lot of trouble, and Paul Pogba is definitely red carded. So I don't see how the VAR can't look at that and not see that as a free kick. I thought it beggared belief. I don't know about you.
Dermot Gallagher was trying to explain it away, and he says, yes, you can see his shin pad sort of move, but it's only a glancing blow, and there wasn't any real intent. And you were going, what? What are you actually seeing here? Because with that, and he does actually catch him, Tiz, because he does say to people, look, this is, he's caught him. If he hadn't had his shin pad on, which a lot of us didn't do back in the day, I'll tell you what, it could have been dangerous.
Being dangerous, but who was the referee? Yeah. Who was the referee? Mike Dean. What did you say about Mike Dean last week, Tiz?
He had a good week last week, not so good this week. I mean, that's not his best decision. Mike Dean is back to normal, bless him. Oh dear. No, I have to say I think United got away with one there. They'll probably argue that perhaps the decision went against them against Southampton last week with what they might have perceived a foul on Fernandes, and they're probably thinking that this is a little bit of payback for that, I guess.
Boys.
But I think I'm going to move on because I think we have to mention the team that are top of the league at the moment. After three, I'm going to come to you, Charlie, because you'll know about this. After 3-1-0 wins, are they in danger of becoming boring, boring Spurs?
Oh, Matthew!
I would doubt it, Tiz, because I know originally you were probably a Spurs fan until you really became a mainstay of Southampton Football Club. But the change of manager, I think when you look back, that's the type of thing you expected Mourinho was going to create at Spurs. And then he's all over the shop. They get Harry Kane to finally admit defeat, as the three is all assumed when we started the podcast way back, that he would be staying at Spurs. There was no way they could anybody could afford to buy him, in their opinion. And I think what you've got with Nuno is he's came in, he works at the organisation like he did at Wolves, because he got it bang on at Wolves very quickly when he came into the Premier League. And then he knows he can play counter-attack football. He's got Dele Alli, not firing all cylinders, but at least back in the team and feeling part of it again. So I think the kind of feel-good factor at the moment is pretty strong for them. And although it pains me to see them sitting up there and us at the bottom of the league, they are getting the job done. And this is what we would expect Mourinho to do, but it's Nuno who's starting to do it. But I don't see this continuing, because Spurs fans will end up getting fed up and annoyed if you're going to just wait and play counter-attack football and not dominate, i.e. Watford at home, and go and finish the game off. That's what's always been part of the policy that Spurs fans like. So I don't think this will continue, but it's an impressive start from the new manager, I have to admit that.
Charlie, give him a bit of credit, for goodness sake. You're so bitter to your local rivals.
Brentford's your local rivals. Well,
Charlie, I'll tell you a player who's impressed me quite a bit. No, not too many people, is Bergwijn. I think he's looking at the player that Spurs thought they were getting. I think he's been quite, for this performance, is what he's playing at these first three games anyway. He's really turned it on.
Yeah, and I think Watford actually put up a pretty good account for themselves as well. I thought it was going to be a pretty comfortable win for Spurs, if I'm honest, but Watford actually didn't do too bad in that game, which surprised me a little bit. Now, the only other game that we haven't mentioned is one that I watched for its entirety on Sunday afternoon, and it's probably 93 minutes of my life I'll never get back. but it was Burnley against Leeds. I mean, I was sat there with my dad watching this game, and we could not believe the lack of quality in that football match, certainly in the first hour of the game. The amount of possession that was given away, there just seemed to be a lack of any real top quality play in that game at all. And did it surprise? I was a little bit surprised actually that Leeds got back into the game, because that wasn't the Leeds that I saw for a lot of last season. That was a Leeds that didn't have the same energy levels as they showed last season. And I thought in the end Burnley were a little bit unlucky not to take all 3 points. I don't know what you boys thought.
Well, I did actually fancy Burnley to win the game. But I think they're another team who really, they did all right. Very Burnley should have been down to 10 men. Probably one of the worst tackles of the whole weekend was Ashley Barnes's, which was, I think it was about 2.5 foot off the ground, and nearly cut the lad in half trying to clear the ball on the inside left position in his own box. I thought it was absolutely outrageous. Mm. And you're right, Tiz. Most of the stuff that I've seen, the stuff that I've seen in the press, the lack of quality, surprisingly, the quality you'd more expect from Leeds just wasn't there.
It was.
No, absolutely. And you're right about that challenge as well, Tomo. But for me, what frustrated me about that Ashley Barnes challenge is it should never have been allowed to happen, because the linesman should have been flagging for offside and not letting the play go on. Now, I know that they're told to keep their flags down when it's tight, but Chris Wood was a full 2 yards offside when he gets that ball, and yet he keeps his flag down. And then in the end, we nearly get a very bad injury and a red card because of him not putting his flag up when he should have done. And that for me is a bit of a frustration.
Tiz, I've told you that now for the last couple of years. It's shocking what they're doing, how they're delayed. So it's going to take somebody to get a serious injury, hopefully not, before these lawmakers change this.
No, you're right, Tom, because we are getting closer to that serious injury to portray this and look on upon it. You know, I mean, Tiz, you were talking about 90 minutes of your life. I had 4 hours of my life, because we started with the Glasgow Derby and then we moved on to Burnley and Leeds for the afternoon. So I had 4 hours of absolute lack of quality from two football matches, which is a disappointment for me.
What a bad weekend you've had, Charlie.
Charlie, you've had a shocker. Get back to your
always
wife.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Excellent. Well, I've had an absolute ball again this week, boys. It's been great fun. And before we go, we need to mention the Jeff Stelling's Walk for Prostate Cancer. I know you two boys have done your bit to help Jeff out. And I'm joining him on Saturday to walk around London for 26 miles. I can tell you the only training that I've done has been with a set of golf clubs on my back. My feet could be in bits come Sunday morning. But if you can support Jeff at all and support prostate cancer, we would be very, very grateful to you guys.
The absolutely little fella,
as Tomo mentioned many times, not got the biggest legs, Tomo, is he? It's going to be a challenge for him.
He's going to be about 5'2" by the time he finishes these walks.
What, he's going to grow?
When I left him, he was 5 foot, Tomo, so he's probably lower than that now.
Well, good luck, Jeff. You've been fantastic, pal. Well done.
Great.
Well
great
done, Charlie.
Again.
Absolutely.
Tez, you'll enjoy it. It's brilliant.
And
enjoy,
if you see
Tez
us walking around London, give us a wave. It's been a pleasure, boys, and I look forward to speaking to you all next week, previewing the upcoming Premier League fixtures. But for now, where's Jeff?
Where's Jeff?